Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Elixir Mix podcast. You probably haven't heard from me for a while on this show. We'll talk about that. This week on our panel, we have Sophie De Benedetto.
Hello.
We also have Josh Adams.
Hey.
And then we have a bunch of folks who are here as first-time regular panelists. And so we're just going to go down the list and announce them all. So we'll start with Bruce Tate.
Hi, everybody.
Lars Wickman.
Hello.
Alex Kutmos.
Howdy, howdy.
Was I in the ballpark on that?
Yep, you got it perfect.
Steven Nunez.
What's up?
Was I in the ballpark on that one?
Pretty good. All right. I don't know if you fancy being Nunez, but...
Nunez, all right. Nika Kalathiel.
Hey.
Was I anywhere in the ballpark on that one?
Yeah, totally.
I'm terrible saying people's names unless they're like, I've seen them before. So anyway, your app is slow and you probably don't even know it. Maybe it's fine in most places, but then the customer loads the page up, that one page, and after a couple of seconds, their attention disappears into Twitter and never comes back. The reality is there are performance issues in your app and they're affecting your customer experience. What you need to do is hook up your app to Scout APM and let it start telling you where the slowdowns are happening. It makes it really easy. It tells you how slow things are and what the problem is, like N+1 queries or memory bloat. It's also built for developers, so it makes it really easy to identify where the fix needs to go. I've hooked it up to some of my apps and I saw what I needed to fix in a couple of minutes. Try it today for free and they'll donate $5 to the open source project of your choice. Just go to scoutapm.com/devchat and then deploy it to your app. Once you do that, they'll donate the $5. That's scoutapm.com/devchat. So this is our 100th episode of this show. And when we started it, I was one of the regular panelists. And then I eventually bowed out and let Mark take it over, Mark and Josh. And Sophie joined. And it's been fun to listen to her for the last several episodes. I'm curious. How do we want to start? Do we want to start out with introductions with our newer folks? I mean, you've all been on the show before once. Let's do that, and then we can talk about kind of what our favorite episodes have been in the past. Bruce, let's start with you.
Hey, everybody. I'm Bruce Tate, and I've been involved with the Elixir community for a good long time. So the main things that I'm doing right now, I've got a teaching company. We do formal classes for mostly centered around Elixir, LiveView, and OTP. I am a part-time editor at the Pragmatic Bookshelf, and we run a couple of conferences, though we're not running anything right now. we just announced that we're canceling Gig City Elixir this year, and we're, I also work with Lone Star Elixir from Jim Fries. So that's me.
Good deal. Lars, how about you?
I'm a freelancer based in Sweden. And I've been coding Elixir professionally for a year or so, hobby level for several years. And I've been a guest on the show a few times, mostly due to writing blog posts about the things I do. So that's me.
Nice. Steven?
Hey, everyone. So my name is Steven. I'm a staff engineer at the Flatiron School. We're a coding boot camp that takes you from zero to dev in 15 weeks. Mostly teaching Rails and React and Redux, all that fun stuff. No Elixir yet. I got into Elixir a pretty long time ago, I guess, at this point. My oldest Elixir repo is from March 15th, 2014. So that's like pre-1 everything. But I saw it and I thought it was amazing. I knew I wanted to be a part of that community. I've been on before and happy to be here now.
Awesome. Mika.
Hey, everyone. I'm Mika. I started in Elixir probably about 6 years ago. Just kind of been doing, I work at TSM. I'm a engineer doing statistics analysis on gaming websites, so big data.
That sounds fun. I want to nerd out, but we don't have time. Alex.
Hey, I'm Alex Kudmos. I currently work at a company called Bridge Connector, where we use Elixir in production. I got into Elixir, I think it was towards the end of 2015 when I read Sasha Yurick's Elixir in Action first edition book. And since then, I've been hooked. For the past year, I've been trying to write blog posts pretty regularly and kind of trying to investigate various parts of the language and the ecosystem that interest me.
Very cool. Sophie and Josh, you've been around for a little longer. Do you want to just quickly summarize how you wound up on this show?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So, hey, everybody, my name's Sophie. If you've been listening for the past couple episodes, then you probably heard me talking on them. I got involved with Elixir Mix after coming on as a guest, I think once or twice, a couple months back, and really so enjoyed the experience. Hit it off with Mark and Josh and Eric, and they went on to invite me to join the panel. And just a little brief background, I guess, on me for anyone who doesn't know me super well. I've been working with Elixir for the past several years. I'm a senior engineer at GitHub, where unfortunately we're not using Elixir in production yet, but I did work on a number of Elixir projects in my previous role at the Flatiron School, where I actually worked with Steven. And Steven is more or less the reason that I got into Elixir, period. So I'm extremely happy he's here. Steven, if your first Elixir repo was March 15th, 2015, mine was probably March 16th, because Steven is a master brainwasher of all exciting things Elixir. And I'm also a member of Elixir School's maintaining group, which Elixir School is a free open source online Elixir curriculum. Always looking for contributors if anybody wants to check that out. And also part of the group that organizes the MPEX NYC conference, NYC's annual Elixir conference, which we were meant to have in May, unfortunately had to cancel this year. Hopefully we'll see what happens next year and encourage everybody to stay tuned about that.
Awesome. Josh?
Yeah, so I've been here since episode one. So you and I talked a really long time ago, I guess 100 episodes ago, and just talked about doing this thing. And I've been in the Elixir community also since pre-1.0, doing it in production before 1.0. And it's been a lot of fun. I ran Elixir SIPs for a really long time, just teaching people Elixir. And these days I run a consultancy, DBA, at dbadbadba.com. Very marketing-friendly URL. And we help build products for people, typically using Elixir and Flutter and GraphQL and all that stuff, but regularly using whatever makes sense for the project.
Nice. I keep wanting to check out Flutter. So I should probably also just talk
it's actually phenomenal.
Oh, really? Another Google project for me to start a podcast about. So I'll talk a little bit about the origin of the show. When was it? I mean, we started, I guess, 2 or so years ago. Essentially, what happened was I sent a survey around and I asked people where they were at, what they were doing, and what they wanted shows started on. And at the time, the two biggest shows were JavaScript Jabber and Ruby Rogues. And so the response I got back was overwhelmingly to start shows on React for the JavaScript community and Elixir from the Ruby crowd. So, and I recognize a few faces and voices from the Ruby crowd. So, just here on this call. So anyway, so I started reaching out to people to see who I knew who were doing Elixir. We invited Mark, we invited Josh, I think we had one or two other people, and I am just totally drawing a blank on who we had. I should just go back.
Justin Bean was on the first episode.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that was May 2nd, 2018.
Yep. So, which is also interesting because, you know, just given the ties between Ruby and all the people that have come over to Elixir, Ruby Rogue's first episode was recorded and released in May as well in 2011. So, this has kind of followed some of that same track, which is interesting. But yeah, so we pulled the show together and got it started. We started the React show, I think, about a month before this show. But this one, the React and Vue podcasts that we have on devchat.tv, all started around the same time. So yeah, anyway, that's how that came together. I was wanting to learn Elixir. I spend most of my time running a podcast network, though, so I didn't have time to go too awfully deep. And so eventually, yeah, I talked to Mark and Josh and just said, hey, guys, do you want to run with this? Because I don't know how much I'm really bringing to the table here as far as deep Elixir knowledge. What I bring to the table is the shows go out on time. So anyway, so that's kind of how the show started. And it's evolved since then. I'm curious. And anybody can chime in on this, as we've done this for 99 episodes now, which episodes have been your favorite? And it can be one that we haven't released yet, because people will have it before they have this.
Made a list somewhere. I've got to look them up. So I really enjoyed the first time we chatted with Eric Ostrich and subsequent times. Those were always really fun conversations because he was always doing something very interesting. And very early on, we also spoke with Sasa Yurik and Brooklyn Zelenka, and both those were lots of fun. Really like what Brooklyn was pushing in the Elixir community. And and then actually there's an episode where Michael Reese had just joined the podcast and we didn't have a guest. And so Michael and I talked about issues we'd seen in production. And that was a lot of fun because I'd only really talked with Michael a couple of times prior to that. So we got to party.
Yep. Michael and Mark are both local to me, by the way. So that's how I know them, both of them.
So I'll answer the question from another perspective. James Gray and I got to come on as guests, and that was just so much fun, you know. So it's interesting when I met James, he was speaking at the Ruby conferences, and he was big into Ruby Rogues and the Ruby Quiz and TextMate. And he was one of those people where when he came into a room, time stopped, right? And he has this tremendous energy and pull about him. So when I get to kind of share the microphone with him, it's a tremendous experience for me. And I never quite know what he's going to say. He worked for me for a couple of years. And I actually brought him on at I Can Make It Better as an eventual replacement. So he worked for me for a little while, and that seemed completely backwards, right? So it's a heady thing when you get to work with your legends, with the people that kind of shaped your public persona as a programmer. And anytime I'm on a podcast with them, it's that way.
Yeah, I had that same experience, mostly on Ruby Rogues. Every time we talk, I was just like, okay, I learned about 8 things that I'm going to forget 3 of before the end of the day because I can't hold it all in my head. So yeah, he's definitely one of my favorite people to talk to because there's always that kind of mental challenge of can I keep up? And wow, I didn't even know Elixir or Ruby or whatever could do that.
And he's so humble also about it, right? So he's one of those people that that really excels at what he does because there's an interesting cocktail of his past. And, he has some disabilities, which impacts how he thinks because he automates everything. And he's so intelligent and kind of having been in a professional programming role for so long and in these programming contests, which optimize completely different things. He has a very interesting way of attacking problems that I appreciate tremendously.
I found the experience of coming on to the podcast very encouraging, considering I'm not based in the Ruby world to start. I got into Elixir from the stories of a boss who was very much into Ruby and Rails. I come from mostly Python recently and started looking into Elixir. And as I started my own business and started freelancing, I figured I would also like to basically start writing again. I haven't been writing much before I started freelancing again. But having Mark reach out and ask me to come on the podcast because of a post I wrote, that was a really encouraging experience. And I've always felt very welcome in the Elixir community. It really does pick up on what you do as long as you keep at it. I mean, not every blog post is going to get attention, definitely not. But if you keep at it, things happen, and it's really interesting to come on a podcast and have a chance to talk about something you're really passionate about. Sometimes you just write into the void, and it's been extremely encouraging in the Elixir community how often these things are picked up and ran with, and how much response you get. So that's probably my favorite part of this podcast: the fact that it does lift up almost anyone who produces things in the Elixir community. Some other podcasts are the same host and panelists every time, which is fine. And some have mostly high profile guests. And this one has, I would say, all of it. You've had plenty of high profile guests, but you've also lifted up anyone who's basically done anything of interest, which I find laudable.
Yeah, I definitely want to echo that sentiment. I was kind of in a similar position where I was just like writing blog posts every month. I had no idea if anybody cared, if anybody read. But when Mark reached out and wanted to chat about one of the posts I wrote about Broadway and Prometheus and monitoring, it was super encouraging. It was a fun experience chatting with everyone, getting to know everyone, and then kind of sharing my thoughts on architecting these data processing pipelines. So definitely echo that sentiment, Lars.
That was such a good post. I can go next. So I actually really enjoyed Sophie's episode on LiveView. I think the one thing that this podcast lets you explore is working with software that's still being figured out, right? I think LiveView is in a very different place when sort of she came on and gave her talk, or where you kind of have to figure out and hack things together. And it's cool that she came on and talked about the scrappy way of figuring out how to do some stuff with LiveView that's since been made really nice, or a lot nicer, in response to kind of like us as a community pushing onto the edges of LiveView and similar libraries. But yeah, it's been great.
Yeah, that was also influential for me. And I think that sometimes podcasts can really be about monologues, right? And kind of the chemistry of that conversation was really great. And that pulled me further into LiveView. I'd kind of seen Chris's original stuff, and at the time we were working on Jose and Chris and I were working on Programming Phoenix. But when you get to see a framework from the perspective of people who are writing about it and teaching it, and you get to hear it with the kind of this excellence in interviewing that's always been on this podcast, it really can advance individual movements. And I like that about the show.
And then tonight, Bruce is introducing a bunch of people in the Birmingham Elixir community to LiveView. So that's a nice follow-on.
Yeah, so carrier landings in the dark, right? So live coding, LiveView. I think that the framework lends itself to that kind of work. But there's always the mental model that you have when you're coding, which usually conflicts with the mental model that you have when you're teaching. So, I always say one or two pretty interesting, pretty wrong things during such a session.
So you've given a remote talk? Is that what I gathered? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think the part when you're teaching and doing live coding, when you say something totally wrong, is that ends up being the most fun, because you never know what kind of realizations your students in the room are going to have based on whatever error that you just made.
Mistakes are really, really important. And I think that one of the things about that format, that particular format, I've started teaching all of my professional classes in that format, where we pick a problem, we live code through it, and we share the keyboard. And the most important things that happen are, first, that people gain confidence, because they see that, professionals, they see a side of them that they don't normally see, right? That that we have this concept of my blog has to be perfect. I have to talk about going straight to the right answer in the end, right? So I think that sometimes when you do a live coding thing like this, even when the schedule is a little bit compressed, which I think it'll be tonight, it's a lot of fun. And I think it's really confidence building for especially intermediate developers.
Sounds good. Can I get in on that?
Absolutely.
Hey folks, this is Charles Maxwood, and over the last few years, I've gotten to know a lot of great people within the Microsoft community, and specifically in the .NET area. One of our guests from JavaScript Jabber, Sean Claybo, actually reached out to me and said he wanted to start a show on .NET, and there are a ton of people out there that I feel like sometimes get neglected in the .NET space. So if you're one of those folks, you've been listening to maybe one or two of the other .NET-focused or Microsoft-focused podcasts for a while and thought, well, where's the devchat.tv style podcast for me in .NET? you can find it. It's at adventuresin.net. .net is spelled out, D-O-T-N-E-T. Adventuresin.net.com. Go check it out today. It's just, yeah, I'm assuming you're doing it remotely, or are you in Birmingham?
It's a Zoom.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I thought.
We started a Birmingham meetup. The idea is that what I'm looking for is to kind of build Gig City Elixir and that brand. It's basically a conference that was started to support some mentoring efforts that I have. And I want to basically tap the communities around, like Birmingham, like Nashville, like Atlanta and Knoxville, and kind of pull some of those developers together. And this is a chance to kind of expand that worldview, right? So, you know, first with the live coding session, and then, you know, through supporting the community, maybe bring some of the great support that's happening in Birmingham. Bring some of that new blood into Chattanooga as well.
That was an entirely different Birmingham than I was thinking.
Nice. So you're based in Chattanooga then, Bruce?
I am, Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Yep.
Right on the river.
Yeah, been there a couple times. Anyone else want to chime in with favorite episodes? I think one of the ones that stood out to me, of course, I was on the show early, was when we got Chris McCord to come on and talk about LiveView when it was first coming out. And, you know, just kind of the ideas behind it and, you know, how you could go and play with it. And yeah, it wasn't fully baked, but it was mostly usable. And yeah, I really enjoy that aspect of things. And I'm also very gratified to hear that the show reflects the community in the way that you all brought that in, because that's important. You know, not just to talk to the top people, but talk to the people that make it up, because that's the great thing. You know, you go to the conference and sometimes you wind up sitting by somebody that you know, or that you've heard of. And sometimes you wind up sitting by somebody that you're, you know, you'll be in contact with again because you liked them, but they, you know, they're not standouts in any way in the community because they're not out there in the public. And both of those are just terrific opportunities to really, you know, see what the community's like. And everybody is so welcoming and just happy to see you there.
That's why every episode starts with your Elixir podcast talking with members of the community. Hat tip, Mark.
Yeah, I think that matters a lot, and especially when you know we're so fortunate to have leaders like Jose and Chris and you know, I would very much put Frank Hunleth in that group, that have a humility about them, especially. So when Chris started talking about LiveView, his energy level went up considerably, and that was a lot of fun to see. There was a particular talk that he gave. I think it was not necessarily the one that he presented 2 or 3 years ago at Gig City Elixir, but I think that one of the most recent Elixir conference talks, you know, his energy and excitement was palpable. And he'd probably been talking about these things like, you know, 30 or 40 times. But when someone like that gets on the show, the enthusiasm and the humility and the accessibility of the leadership in the Elixir community is super contagious. I think really does great things for us.
Yeah, I love tying into the stuff that people are passionate about. And yeah, so when that enthusiasm level goes up, yeah, you can feel it. It's contagious. Very cool stuff. So I'm also curious, I think, John, you said you work with Nerves a bit. Do most of you do Elixir work, or not Elixir work, but Phoenix work? Or is your focus in other areas as well?
I mean, I guess I can elaborate. Even though you're starting the space on my topic, but I don't do much of Phoenix work. Mine is almost all, it's a split between Elixir, Erlang, and C, and it's almost all in the context of Nerves. And if there is Phoenix, it's like because we need a simple view coming from the device in order to keep track of stuff there. The other portion of that is I do a lot of work in the Nerves Hub, which is Phoenix based as well. And I'd say that that's where most of my actual Phoenix work kind of gets to and probably halts a bit.
Yeah, I mean, for me, most of the companies that I've worked in the past that have done where I've done Elixir in production have been kind of Phoenix APIs. But usually I like to keep the Phoenix layer super, super thin and, you know, kind of have the OTP principles kind of drive the backends that I write. Yeah, mostly kind of RESTful services, a little bit of GraphQL these days in Absinthe, but Nerves is actually something that's been on my list for quite a while now. I have a couple of toy projects on the to-do list that I want to dive into, so maybe I'll poke you later, John, for some feedback.
I found it interesting that recently I had a client that ran their whole SaaS on, or their whole service, I should say, on Elixir, but I don't believe Phoenix was quite mature, or they chose not to use Phoenix when they started it. So they were actually running mostly on WebSockets and straight on top of Cowboy and Gun, I believe. Or I guess Gun was used for testing. Anyway, Cowboy. And that was fine too. It was a perfectly reasonable code base to work with. It wasn't strictly web. Or it wasn't websites, web UIs, so it was an app backend. I found it reassuring that Elixir was nice to work with, regardless of Phoenix, honestly. I like Phoenix. I'm perfectly happy to work with Phoenix, but it's not required for work. Like in the case of Nerves, for example, it's usually a good idea to try to avoid a whole web stack if you can. But I've seen clients run their businesses straight on top of Elixir and Cowboy, and it's fine. So I thought that was interesting and reassuring.
So one of the things that's encouraging to me about Elixir is that when I'm writing a lot of Phoenix code, when I'm teaching Phoenix classes, when I'm writing a lot of OTP code, when I'm teaching OTP classes, I know that I'm on the right track when I'm doing less OTP and more base Elixir, when I'm doing less live view and more Elixir. It also lets me know that the APIs are on the right track, that I can use the same layering principles in Phoenix, live view, Nerves, Scenic, all of these. You maintain this similar set of principles. You try to expand your functional core. And what's, you know, basically pure, you know, we're not going to get dogmatic about it. You know, you can have random numbers and dates in a core, and that's okay. But also the concepts like keeping your handlers in OTP or Scenic or Live View super skinny and push that code out and into a core as soon as you can. So I know that I'm on the right track with Elixir when I can sneak away from Withland as soon as I can and sneak into Pipeland, right? When I have the right layering that makes my code functional and predictable in the core. And, you know, where I scrub my code in a tiny layer, where I do my process machinery in a tiny layer, when I plug into LiveView or Phoenix or OTP and the rest of it.
I'm actually going to call out Stephen on something related to this topic. I know Stephen very recently published a blog post that I recommend people check out. Yep, sorry, putting you in the spotlight. Incorporating the presentation model design pattern into a live view that I think we formerly really struggled with this, right? Like we have this live view, it's getting fatter and fatter, kind of starting to smell like your typical fat controller. And, you know, what's the right place to hide away all of this logic so that you can, exactly like you said, Bruce, exit with land and enter pipe land. So I'm curious, Stephen, if you want to share a little bit about the pattern that you have been recently applying to live view.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely inspired by some of your writing, Bruce. You know, the idea that gen servers being sort of like this thing that runs in space and in response to messages and kind of like understanding that that implicitly has some difficulty in testing and sort of like you can do it as pure as you can, but it's harder than just having a function that you can call and get some new state back and make assertions against was something that I really wanted when working in LiveView. And a lot of the paths that, you know, you follow a tutorial or read a blog post or read out the documentation, and they suffer from tutorialitis, which is just like, this is enough for you to get the thing done. It makes sure that you can get inputs, handle event, trigger some change in the state, it'll be great. But you start building something and you're like, wow, this is getting out of hand really fast. I wish I had the abstractions that I apply to gen servers. And the beauty of Elixir is that you can have these like isolated modules that do these things very well, clearly tested, as pure, like you said, as possible. And you can have just a small layer, which is your live view, and a small layer of testing, which is going to be, did you do the right thing in case A? Did you do the right thing in case B? But the details are in these like really tight functional modules that let you test all the edge cases super cleanly, super clearly. And I wrote that blog post because I noticed that, like, again, people are getting excited about it. But once you start building with it, you're going to run into this weird thing where you're going to have some weird coupling, some, you know, temporal coupling, just be in a weird state, hard to test, and it's going to suck. And it's going to turn people off to it. So I think having those patterns and putting them forward as a part of the tutorials that we write, as a part of the kind of like content that we create for the community, is also really important. Part of it's like, hey, click a button, handle event, update state, hooray. But then also taking that extra step, which I think you've done a great job at, Bruce.
Thank you for that little bit of praise. Maybe not deserved, but I do think that the idea of finding places to make a clean break in our architecture, a clean layer, there are certain elements that the break is extremely important. And so one of those, you mentioned one of those in the whole layering system, that first step, right? So another one I think that is super important is the idea of a schema-less chain set, right? So sometimes what I'll do when I'm validating a couple of inputs that I'll kind of pour into, you know, I've been kind of working with this framework for new developers. If you have a pipeline, it's good to keep as many elements of the pipeline as you can in the same module, right? So the pattern is constructor, reducer, 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 converter, reducer, 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 right? So I think that if we start to do certain things, like say LiveView is a state with reducers over a socket, right? And so as many functions as you can are reducers over sockets. And when you have conversion points, you think about how do you keep the data, how do you stay in a consistent state and those conversion points, right? And schema-less chain sets allow me to have a set of user-defined attributes that don't necessarily map straight onto my schema. And that allows me to have a cleaner, simpler design. And so I've been teaching those concepts to pretty basic Elixir developers, and I think they're starting to get it.
So one thing that I'm also curious about as we kind of talk through this a little bit is, are there things coming in the Elixir community that you're aware of that you're looking forward to? You know, things that we don't have right now? Or?
I'm always the first to mention Lumen. Lumen, Lumen, Lumen. I'm really curious to see what Lumen can do for one thing. The first priority of Dockyard, I believe, is to be able to use Lumen for replacing JavaScript, basically, to avoid having to write JavaScript for front-end development. So Lumen is a compiler to compile Elixir, Erlang, Beam languages to fairly optimized WebAssembly, and not actually running the entire Beam, which is a rather heavy VM, on and inside the browser. An additional set of interesting parts become available when you realize that WebAssembly runs on a bunch of microcontrollers these days, and also on things like CloudFront Workers and edge computing overall. And since Lumen is also building on LLVM, it should be able to compile to other native instruction sets over time. It's focused on solving the WebAssembly thing and getting into the browser firsthand. But there's so many interesting things that become possible when you realize that you could build any Beam language to a tight executable with all the unnecessary bits stripped out. And I'm really, really keen to see what the results are when we start getting access to Lumen. It's still not in what I'd call a public release, it's not in a public release. So it's not really usable yet, but they're making very good progress, it seems. So I follow it fairly closely and I help out with the website because I don't know compilers like that.
That sounds cool.
So I've been looking at two areas, and I'm not sure that we're ready yet for breakthroughs in these areas in the frontier. But the first one is the idea of this necessary tension between static and dynamic typing. And Elixir is basically in the static camp with one toe in the water, or in the dynamic camp with one toe in the water of the static camp, right? With things like Dialixir and with flows that are not quite perfect, but sometimes helpful. So one of the projects there are a couple of sets of projects that are interesting. One is the Facebook project around the typed Elixir, typed Erlang. That's interesting to me. So the second thing that's interesting is looks in the other direction that say, hey, wait a minute, why don't we look at some of the advantages of what we're doing with dynamic typing, where we don't have to teach the monads and monoids and all of these complex concepts. And maybe we can test our boundary conditions in a computational way instead of with a type way. So the Chris Keithley Library for Norm, I think, is important thinking. That's probably not getting a lot of play right now. But the idea is that just like the Ada language had these things that established preconditions, we can have many of the same things by cooking a lot of this stuff in with a compiled set of macros. And so Brooklyn Zelenka gave kind of a hat tip to this approach at CodeBeam in San Francisco that was interesting. And so the other set of technologies, I'm kind of blanking. We'll leave it there.
I'm going to come off a little basic, I think. I am crazy excited about what LiveView can do. So one thing I think about in sort of like any of these like tech community in general is that thing that makes people look at it and say, wait, I should pay attention. So if you think historically, we're thinking DHH is like blog in 10 minutes, right? At the time, incredibly mind-blowing to like move from this like typical Java way of doing things, your Hibernate models, your so much ceremony to do something that you can make a scaffold and get a CRUD set up and running. It was mind-blowing and I think deservedly so. And I think for years I've been thinking like, what is that thing that's going to be it for like Elixir, right? Like on the base layer you have, Elixir is functional and pure. That's cool. And you've got like your gen servers and you've got supervision and you've got distribution and you have kind of like all these layers. And I'm trying to think about like, what is the thing that really takes all of these components and showcases them and shows off essentially that this is worth looking at. Like all the things that are really typically difficult in just modern development, web and beyond, are really easy here. And you should take a look. And I think we got really close with Chris McCord's, basically the Twitter clone, because it did start to show off that you can get really rich interactions for nothing with LiveView. You can get scaffolding, good feedback. We've got package management. We've got dependency management. You've got distribution, clustering, automated you can configure failover. Like there's a lot of really good stuff. And I think that that's going to come through LiveView. I think that that sort of like 15-minute demo that's like mind-blowing is something that we're kind of circling, not the drain, but circling, what's the opposite? Circling, ascending to heaven towards a really good example of what that is. I think LiveView is the key.
If you get a 15-minute LiveView and Nerves demo, I'm watching that thing.
Yeah, that would be incredible. And I think it's something like that because all these things, again, it makes, embedded work, easier. It makes distributed work. It makes web work. All these things are just like simpler. They have like a layer that we've put on top to abstract out hard concepts. And yeah, 15 minutes, you could probably do something amazing.
I think that's one of the biggest advantages of Elixir is that it is so easy to use everywhere as well. And when you're using it on devices like Nerves, you're able to bring in all the things from Phoenix like LiveView. And it's just so easy to use. You can basically get up and running with some great interactions, great features very quickly because of the frameworks and systems that are in place in the Elixir community.
The deployment story is amazing. Like, there's just so many great things. And I think that this whole package story, we need to kind of like get a nice tight, got to work on our type five, right? We've got to get this thing that like, this is why it's amazing. Your deployment, your concurrency, failover, embedded systems, WebSockets, all super easy.
Yeah, I think oh, go ahead.
As I was getting into Elixir, I think I found that every other month there was something like that that just captured your imagination and ran with it. Not specifically the like 5 minute, 15 minutes instant success. But when I started looking into Elixir and Phoenix, I'd heard cool things about Phoenix and Ecto, and then Phoenix Presence dropped. And I was like, ooh, these are interesting talks. This is interesting tech. And just as that was dying down for me, I think I found Nerves. I think they were on roughly the same conferences as well. And then CineKit. And there are so many different unique libraries and frameworks for Elixir and the Beam that I don't see it possible to replicate elsewhere. I wrote a little bit about this in a blog post recently that I can see people sometimes say, LiveView seems super cool. Let's do that for Node.js. And I'm like, I don't think that really works the way you think it works. I don't think you can do that in a completely healthy way under Node.js. I think you're having some serious challenges trying to copy the surface of something like LiveView or Phoenix Presence without having the very, very solid foundation and very specific kind of foundation that we have on the Beam. And now we have LiveView, which is also an example of this. And
you're probably not replacing supervision trees with exception handling.
No. And I think, I hope most people have seen Sasha Urich's talk about the heart and soul. Just the whole demo of running one scheduler, basically running Elixir in single threaded mode and it never blocking the work. It just keeps running even when he introduces infinite loops, that sort of thing. And you won't have that in Node.js. You won't have that in Python. You won't have that in Ruby unless you do some serious jumping through hoops to get there. And I think the foundation we have means that whenever people build something really cool on top of it, it's incredibly reliable, it's incredibly useful, and it has some unique capabilities that you don't see elsewhere, basically unique capabilities. And like you said, Nerves, if you pick up Nerves, you can basically run any of these really cool frameworks or libraries on embedded devices. And whenever you start looking at, oh, we need to scale this, we need a cluster. Okay, we already have that in the Beam. And that's always in the back of the mind when building these things. So I'm really curious to see where both LiveView goes and all the, whatever the next thing is. I actually have one for my pick, which I think might be a sleeper hit.
One of the biggest pain points that I find as I talk to people about software is deployment. It's really interesting to have the conversations with people where it's, I don't want to deal with Docker. I don't want to deal with Kubernetes. I don't want to deal with setting up servers. I don't, you know, all of these different things. And in a lot of ways, DevOps has gotten a lot easier. And in a lot of ways, DevOps has also kind of embraced a certain amount of culture around applications, the way we build them, the way we deploy them. And I've really felt for a long time that developers need to have the conversations with DevOps or adopt some form of DevOps so that they can take control of what they're doing and really understand when things go to production, what's going on, so that they can help debug the issues and fix the issues and find the issues when they go wrong and help streamline things and make things better and slicker and easier so that they'll more generally go right. So we started a podcast called Adventures in DevOps. And I pulled in one of the hosts from one of my favorite DevOps shows, Nell Shamrell Harrington from the Food Fight show. And we got things rolling there. And so this is more or less a continuation of the Food Fight show where we're talking about the things that go into DevOps. So if you're struggling with any of these operational type things, then definitely check out Adventures in DevOps. And you can find it at adventuresindevopspodcast.com.
So the idea that Elixir has turtles all the way down, as Jose says it, is really interesting and really important. So you can see Chris McCord coming over from the Ruby on Rails community where he was trying to build the top and then build the infrastructure to match, and it just doesn't work. And then you saw him come over to the Ruby or to, from the Ruby community to the Elixir community, and he and Jose worked on infrastructure. And when it was rich enough, bang, live view happened very, very quickly. And with a performance and with an abstraction, that's going to be hard to match elsewhere. And the reason is that we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. There's so much infrastructure going back 30 years with OTP that enables all of this. Right, it's not just the tiny interaction. Hey, I clicked a button and it flew back and forth without a hitch. It's that if you have 1,000 of such tiny interactions going back and forth, they're all going to be in reasonable performance because of the infrastructure.
I think it's very impressive what Elixir is able to do with its resources and how it's set up to handle the concurrency that it is. I remember when I first started in kind of looking into WebSockets and I was using Node, it had a very hard time getting to like almost 10,000 concurrent connections. And for Elixir at the time, you could achieve that on a Raspberry Pi. So it was pretty impressive because you could do what Node could barely do at the time on the lowest of low hardware in Elixir, just because it was so good at dealing with its concurrency at a foundational level, which is very, very impressive.
Yeah, that's actually what brought me like to the Elixir ecosystem. I mean, at the time I was in Java land at Amazon and then a little bit of Node.js and PHP. And I was always looking for a language where concurrency was a first-class citizen and kind of baked into the language. And at the time I read, I think it was Go in Action and Elixir in Action. And between reading those two books, I obviously went the Elixir path. But yeah, it was really eye-opening to see a language and a runtime where concurrency was such a core element to the it. So it was quite eye opening.
Yeah, I think that was a big reason, a big draw for me for Elixir. The way I put it is, I looked at the concurrency models that, you know, I was doing Ruby at the time, but the concurrency models of like threads and locks and semaphores, and I was like, I'm too stupid to get this. I'm just gonna be sad off to the corner and just watch multi-core take over and just be sad at my like sad programs. And then I saw Jose, I think I saw him on a Peep Code screencast. I don't know if anyone remembers that, but Jeffrey Rosenbach used to have these, he'd have play-by-play as you come on and like build a thing with the expert on the topic just to see how experts work. And he built something in Elixir and I was like, I get this, this makes sense. And you know, it's the same kind of story over and over. Like Elixir makes things that are traditionally really difficult, right? Distribution, syncing, data across nodes. That's why presence is nice. Concurrency, supervision, makes those things kind of like nice, right? With OTP and other, and obviously the entire ecosystem. But that was a big reason for it. I was like, I get this concurrency. I can actually squeeze out performance from my apps if I write them in this way that is not crazy to write. I like this. I'm going to use this. And that was a big draw for me.
Cool. Well, I'm going to push us into picks and start wrapping it up. Before we do that, though, I do want to acknowledge Eric and Mark have gone on to another project. So the podcast will be a little bit different going forward. But you have all these great people to listen to. So I'm excited to see where it goes from here. So yeah, just a big shout out and a thanks to them for the work that they put in. And yeah, let's go ahead and put together or do some picks. Sophie, do you want to start us off with picks?
Absolutely. So I think I mentioned this, I did mention this earlier, but Steven's blog post on organizing live view logic with presentation models is really great. If you're interested in live view, if you're interested in clean code, I am sure that you will enjoy it. And we'll include the link in the show notes.
All right, Josh, what are your picks?
All right, so I have a couple of picks. One is a Pine phone, which is a $150 Linux phone, which I purchased and will be arriving from Hong Kong on Monday, and I'm very happy about that. And the other is, in the process of keeping up with it, I found the Pine Time, which is a $25 open source smartwatch that has a bunch of different OSs. These are, you know, embedded real-time OSs. And I found a guy that's writing a whole lot about doing stuff with Rust on the watch and interfacing with a control app written in Flutter and all this open source stuff. And it's just, it's a really fun bit of tech to read about.
Awesome. Bruce, do you have some picks for us?
Just one. It's kind of a retro pick, and it's probably something everybody here has seen, but there's a British broadcasting company show called The IT Crowd, which should be the manual for OTP, right? So it's two customer support guys in a basement with a manager. And when you call customer support, they all say, hey, did you try turning it off and on again?
Awesome. All right. Lars, what are your picks?
Well, this is the sleeper hit that I saw on the agenda for ElixirConf EU virtual. It was a good conference. I picked up a ticket, even though I couldn't really attend live because of a 4-week-old baby. That really requires my attention. But I caught the VODs as it rolled on. And there was this presentation on the membrane framework. And I hope people look into this, because this is a media framework written by a company that does specific media and multimedia, like live streaming, media processing, all that sort of stuff. They've been doing this for clients in different tools for a long time, it seems. So they work with GStreamer and FFmpeg and all that sort of stuff. And they didn't really like the way of working with these things. So they've started wrapping all the different components up in Elixir and presenting a really, really interesting model for running like live streams, media management, that sort of thing. And I don't know, if you run a podcast network or something, you might want to look into it.
Yeah, maybe. I have a friend that does it. No, I'm just kidding. Steven, what are your picks?
Cool. So I think I have a kind of a New York-centric one, so forgive me the world, but I think it's a really good one that I want to call out. So at the Flatiron School, we have, we're running a fellowship in partnership with the City of New York to reach low-income New Yorkers where they can come to the school and do the entire curriculum for free. I had the incredible privilege of teaching a couple of rounds of this. Shout out to BK001 and 002, if you're listening. And it's probably one of the more transformational experiences that I've seen as far as like moving people economically. You know, we say tech is a meritocracy, and you know, this gives people a shot. So if you want to check it out, it's flatironschool.com/fellowship. It's a really incredible program, full scholarship, that I can't recommend enough.
Nice. Alex, what are your picks?
Yeah, for me, I'm going to pick two. The first one is the telemetry project. I recently made a PR for the span function, and with the help of Jose and everybody else, they kind of guided me on the right track to finally get it merged. So telemetry is super cool. It's a nice way of kind of standardizing how we emit and act upon events happening within our applications in the ecosystem. So super, super interesting stuff. Highly recommend taking a look at telemetry. And then the other one is a book. I usually try to read one tech book once every month, once every 2 months. I'm currently almost done with designing Elixir systems with OTP. Solid book. Definitely recommend it.
Awesome. Mika, what are your picks?
I have two picks. One of them is the Atom VM, which I find super interesting. It allows you to basically compile Elixir down into a smaller device, such as like a little ESP32, which is a little Wi-Fi chip. And so that's really interesting for when nerves can't be put on a device and you can kind of still use Elixir, which I find fascinating. My second pick is actually a really old one, is React. We have been recently looking into kind of new data stores that are a bit faster than what you traditionally look for. And React kind of was brought about to our attention again, and we noticed there is a 3.0. So React is actually still being currently developed, which is amazing. I think there's a lot of confusion I've seen in the community as well, as like, oh, is React dead? But it's actually still being developed, and there's a 3.0. So that's one of my picks.
Awesome. I'm going to throw in a couple of picks. So one of the things that I've been working on lately, and I know I have a little bit of time before this goes out, you know, so I can add a little bit of polish. But I've been working on a podcasting course, and you can find it at mypodcastplaybook.com. And anyway, I'm starting to put up YouTube videos where I either talk or walk through some of the things that you need to do to set up and run podcasts. So if you're interested in that, definitely let me know. I should also point out that we are looking for hosts on some of our other shows. So if you're doing a lot of Elixir and then you have like a JavaScript front end or a React Native front end or something like that, we are looking for hosts on our React, Angular, and React Native shows and our iOS shows. But I don't know how much crossover we're going to have between Swift and this show. So anyway, if you're interested in being on a podcast, let me know. Yeah, I think I'll just wrap it there. I guess I can throw more in. I've been listening to Brandon Sanderson's book, Warbreaker. It's a fantasy novel. Now, I see Bruce giving a thumbs up, so I'm going to make him green with envy. Brandon Sanderson lives about 15 minutes from here. And he has, they actually bought the house next door to his house. And that's where they warehouse all of their signed books and paraphernalia and things like that. And one of my best friends from high school helps him manage his inventory. And so I got this message out of the blue on Facebook a few weeks ago asking if I wanted to get a tour of what they call Cosmere House. And so I got to go over and walk through Cosmere House. And so if you ever watch the live streams where he's signing books and stuff, I got to see where all that was done and all of the collectibles that he has in there that I can't talk about because I told him I wouldn't. And I mean, it was really, really cool. And just to see the operation they have there as far as shipping out all of that stuff. I wound up with leather bound copies of the Mistborn books, a bunch of paperbacks. I got a free comic book. I got some Doomslug socks if you read Skyward. Anyway, it was amazing. So I don't know that they really do public tours. But I lucked out and I really enjoyed that. So I'm also going to just shout out about all of his stuff, Brandon Sanderson's stuff, because all of his books are just terrific. So anyway, let's go ahead and wrap up. Thank you all for coming and joining in. This was fun.
This is awesome.
All right, folks, until next time, max out.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.